Hey, welcome to a Friday edition of Bulldog Hour, and a little bit, about half of our email hour today. We're on till 3:30, and then we'll turn it over to Nick and Nick. A little bit early start from Fieldhouse with the Zone, because we have baseball scheduled at 5:30 today, as that would be the pregame with Paul, and they would start at 6:05. I say would start because the way the weather is going right now, that game, I would imagine, if not in jeopardy, is certainly up in the air. I was just mentioning to Russ that in the days when Bob Bennett was the coach and I was calling games, there would be times about this time of day for a night game where I would say, there's no way in the world we're going to play today. Yet, 4 hours later, we would be out there and they would be playing. So I'm just saying, like Bennett before him, Bates is going to be careful about the health of the guys out there. But if they feel they can play and he and the other coach have an agreement that it's okay physically to get the guys out there, they'll give it a shot. I don't know. We may hear something more definitive while we're on the air between now and 3:30. Half hour ago, at least in the northwest part of town, it looked like there was no chance. There was a cloud burst, but now the sun is out. It's not going to be warm enough to dry things out, and I don't know how much water the field or the surrounding area outside of the infield and even the outfield, but the foul lines, etc., how much it has absorbed water-wise now, and that's something that Bates and company will have to make a decision about. But this is supposed to be the first of four with Utah Valley State in, and so unless we hear different, we assume Paul will be up at 5:30, so the lineup today, we're on till 3:30, Nick and Nick till 5:30, then Paul will take it from there. If there's any kind of change between now and the time we scoot off air, we'll let you know, and I'm sure Nick and Nick will do the same if there is a change in that particular time period. For us, CG will join us for at least a half hour of emails at 3 o'clock. We'll talk to Marcus a little bit later on, but as always on a Friday, our good friend, the proprietor of Barkboard.com, it's Jackson Moore. Jackson, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Tony, enjoying the weather from safely indoors, and I got to spend my Valentine's Day with my girlfriend yesterday listening to your Flying Nun commentary, so we had a good day.
that's got to be quite a thrill. You know, I had mentioned that there was a guy I worked with, a long time ago when we used to repeat the show at 5 o'clock in the morning. This is before the days of, 24-hour sports entities, and he said that the alarm was set on that station, so it would come up to wake him up, and that he and his wife around this time decided romance was in the offing at about 5 in the morning on Valentine's Day, only to be interrupted by my voice, which he said put a damper on the whole thing. And I said, think about how I feel about it, what I have to deal with this 365 days a year, so you're not getting any sympathy from me. That was my attitude, Jackson. But I'm glad to know that you would know nothing. We're not going to go down that path again. But for you, the Flying Nun was just a rumor, correct? Is that right?
Yeah, I was a little clueless, but my girlfriend got the reference, and she's not a big sports person, so that's about the only reference she got.
Okay, there you go. Again, when in doubt, either Google or Wikipedia should always be at the ready when this show is on the air. That's all the advice I could have for you. All right, I do want to talk about the palpable excitement of having Ole Miss vacate those games. We knew Masoli was cheating, didn't we? We knew at the time. Jackson, that mean anything to anybody at Fresno State vacating games? And we've talked about this, when somebody has to vacate a title, they don't hand it to the person that was next in line. So with Fresno State, just their one loss record, is that the only thing their loss record, the only thing that is affected here?
Yeah, I mean, I think even in Fresno State's books, of course it doesn't come up as a win, but yeah. It doesn't take back those games or make them any less painful for the losses, but it's not too surprising. And really, those Ole Miss teams weren't really the good ones that I kind of maybe expected something like this to happen.
Right.
A few years down the road. Those two games were two that Fresno State probably could have gotten, but came up a little short.
Well, I'll tell you what.
We know why.
Trust me, there are other reasons too, okay, but we're not going to bother with that. Talk about a path we're not heading down. I will say this. prior to 2017, anything you could take off of the L column, I think everybody, Cedar and Barstow, could be all for it. Last couple of years, you know, the avalanche of wins, 22 of them. You hardly pay attention to what happened in even the recent past, right? But anyway, good news overall. All right. Not a lot else going on football-wise, correct? Before we talk basketball, anything in what is, I guess, the calm before, I'm not going to call it the storm because it's the calm before the opportunity with spring football. Anything else going on right now for Teddy and company?
Yeah, just kind of anxiously awaiting that spring schedule. It should be coming out soon. I know San Jose State, of course, I also cover. They just dropped their schedule today, and they're going to get started in a couple weeks. And spring break's kind of late this year, where Fresno State has liked to have split up spring football with that spring break, but I'm not sure how feasible that might be with the late spring break this year. So, I mean, it shouldn't be too long before we get some football going and get a better idea of where some of these open positions kind of settle themselves out.
Yeah, that's a great point, Jackson, because Easter does not fall into a pattern that you can, on a year-to-year basis, count on because of the way Easter Sunday is determined. It is so late this year, what's Easter, like April 20th, right, something like that, that it would really push you back a long way, wouldn't it, to try to play the two break in two. It's just too late to do that. I guess in theory you could do it, but for Tedford, I know that's, what, too far into April to do that?
Yeah, we'll see. I'm not exactly sure, but I know San Jose State has kind of liked to follow that same pattern, and their schedule that just came out today is they're going to get it all done before that spring break. And so I wouldn't be too surprised if Fresno State did something similar or maybe just broke it up by 1 week instead of right in the middle.
Well, some of the schools, as you're well aware, are so late they're into May, for goodness sake, but that usually means they're looking at 50,000 people or national coverage from ESPNU. Though, if you remember, when Pat was coaching, we did have ESPNU come here the one time. Unfortunately, the weather sort of got in the way, and the way things are going this year, we may have to wait till May just to get away from the rains, which we're not complaining about, by the way. Though, I'll tell you what, certain crops like almonds, etc., there is consternation in the ranks right now because you don't want too much rain at the moment. So we'll see how it plays out. But we'll let you know as soon as the determination is made. Do you know when Tedford and Company are going to tell us how they're going to do this?
I mean, we should find out pretty soon. Now's about the time where those become official and they release those. And we're usually out there for barkboard.com covering just about every one of them. So I'm looking forward to setting my schedule and knowing for sure when those are going to be.
And naturally, I'll bother you on almost a daily basis when that happens, so you have that, as always, to look forward to. All right, Jackson, let's move back to basketball. Fresno State coming off of the win. Tough win, but they did get it, and now they go on the road to the Pit, where on a neutral floor, I think we know Fresno State is better than New Mexico this year. They beat the Lobos here already, but that is that singular loss that the Wolfpack suffered there at the Pit. Bulldogs have played pretty well there as of late after a long stretch where nothing went right in Albuquerque. Your level of confidence that tomorrow Fresno State wins?
Yeah, pretty confident, Tony. New Mexico did, of course, beat down Nevada in that game, but that was quite a while ago. We'll still have a pretty good record at home in conference. I mean, they took out San Diego State about a week or two ago. They beat Wyoming and San Jose State, which are not huge feats, but of course it was at home and those were games they got. Probably the one that is most recent that we can point to is that they just fell to Utah State by two, a game they probably should have won, and then of course San Diego State after that. So they're a much more competitive team at home, but this is still a team that Fresno State should be better than. And really, aside from the Colorado State game, they've taken care of business in most of these matchups, whether it is home or on the road.
Jackson, what do you make of what happened the other night against Boise State? It was a game that was close the entire way. Again, the Bulldogs got off a little slow, not as bad as before, but they seem to have the knack more times than not to make the plays down the stretch. In this case, you had the blocks from Grimes and particularly Blackwell. You had the traditional three-point play by Huggins. Does this team have a legitimate chance, in your opinion, to go to Vegas and win the tournament? Or is everybody, as Michael Jordan or Larry Bird used to say around All-Star time, who's playing for second place? I mean, how do you feel about this?
Yeah, I really do see Nevada in a different tier. Of course, they've only lost one game, and it looks like a fluke at this point. They certainly avenged themselves against New Mexico the second time around. But that's not to say the hot team, probably whether it's Fresno State or Utah State, couldn't pose a threat to them in Vegas. Teams like that are probably going to be more motivated than the Wolfpack. They're, of course, going to be in the tournament, and winning a Mountain West Championship tournament game might, or the championship of that tournament might determine a seed or two difference, but I don't think it's going to have much consequences for the Wolfpack, so that's where you might see another team knock them off. But for Fresno State right now, I mean, they've won. I mean, they have an impressive conference record, but they've trailed a lot of these games, especially in the first half. They were down to Boise State by they trailed for 30 minutes out of 40 just about in this past game where they won, but they were never down by more than six, so you never got the feeling that they were panicking or anything like that. I don't think it was their best game, but there's just a quiet confidence that as long as you have someone, mainly Braxton Huggins or Deshaun Taylor, lighting it up, and then you have a couple other complimentary guys, whether it's Nate Grimes, Noah Blackwell, New Williams, as long as the majority of those guys step up, the Bulldogs seem to be in good shape to get victories, and that should serve them well in the tournament up through Utah State and Nevada.
Well, we were kidding around after the Utah State game in Logan, you know, that he asked an auto racer what lap is the most important. He said, I only care about the last one to lead. Right? That's what happened, what 7 seconds or whatever it was in Logan that the Bulldogs did not have the lead. And, Jackson, I'm curious about that aspect of Fresno State's game. You know, Kevin Durant was talking the other day prior to the Warriors deciding to leave half the roster home Wednesday before the – I guess they thought that they'd start the All-Star break early, so they let Iguodala and Livingston and Cousins rest the old bones, right, which was not a bad idea. It did cost him a win, but Kevin Durant had said even though they had won 15 to 16 and 18 to 20, he said, you know, in reality, we're not playing that well. And he was right because they were leaving teams – hanging around, you know, going to Phoenix and getting down 23 early for, you know, giggles. Fresno State is not playing that kind of, hey, you know what, we'll catch you at the end of the game. That's not their attitude, but it keeps happening to them. Do you say that it's a sign that they are going to break out and start blowing people out? Or is, as Durant referenced with the Warriors, a sign of concern that they are making some of these games, particularly at home, too close for comfort?
Yeah, at 9-3, I'm not too concerned. If it had cost them more on the final score, I think I would be. Probably the thing that makes me concerned the most is, say, if Fresno State's a 3 seed and Boise State's a 6 seed and gets out of that first round.
Right.
I don't know if I really want to see the Broncos if I'm the Bulldogs, even though Fresno State gets the season sweep. I mean, those were two pretty competitive games on the road. Fresno State didn't really close out until the last 5 minutes or so, and, of course, this last one went right down to the wire. So that's probably not a team I want to see. Colorado State, if it was Bulldogs maybe get a 2 seed and Colorado State somehow gets out of that first round, that's another team. You know, based off the two games I saw against them, that you may not want to see them either. So, I mean, to get to the big dance, they're probably going to have to go through Utah State. They're probably going to have to go through Nevada. You just don't want to see anything that might cost them that first round, which they should win. And when they play their best, you see them just take out teams like UNLV on the road and New Mexico at home, double-digit wins there. At Wyoming was another double-digit win. But a lot of these games they've had to play from behind. And as Coach Hudson said, they prefer to play from the front. But right now they're just not getting that first half push, and they're taking care of business at the end. But the margin for error gets smaller and smaller when you do that.
Well, we saw what happened against Utah State at home, where you just could not quite get over the hump, even though, you know, you were playing well down the stretch, and it turns out to be a one-point game that you don't win. By the same token, against Boise State the other night, when I asked you about the final possession with Hobbs, I thought that, well, first of all, I had mentioned to Q on Wednesday or on Thursday that I thought that it was a wrong approach for Hobbs to stay away from his jump shot that he was hitting so well at mid-range, and maybe the Bulldogs took him out of that, but he certainly proved on that night he was more than just a guy who's going to attack the rim. He was making threes. He was making mid-range jumpers. Jackson, at the end, were you surprised the manner in which, after getting a last opportunity, Leon Rice and company decided to approach that final possession. That was not a good shot. I don't know if Hobbs was trying to draw a foul. How did you feel about the way Boise State attacked that last opportunity? It was like they were saying, you know what, we're going to win or lose it out here, and what was a very, very difficult shot that almost banked in, but that wasn't the intent.
Yeah, I think it was kind of just a mad scramble with the 6 seconds left. I mean, Coach Hudson would have, they drew that up so that there wouldn't be as much time for them to get down court and set up a shot, but there still wasn't quite enough time for the Broncos either to set up a better shot. And that's kind of, I think, the best they could really get. For Fresno State, I think they did such a good job shutting down the rest of the team. I mean, that's a Boise State team that usually has four guys in double figures every night, and Hobbs was the only one that really had it on Wednesday night, and they pretty much knew he was going to have the ball in his hand. So I think by that token, they were able to kind of force them into a unpleasant situation, and Hobbs, with time running off the clock, had to settle for that. And I mean, from my angle too, I was on the baseline and it looked like it was heading straight to the net, and then it bounced off the glass. So it could have been probably more difficult for him, but still a tough shot and one that he's not going to make most of the time.
Yeah, and I was talking to Daryl about the fact that Deshaun did a real smart thing on that play, Jackson. He turned his back to the side to make sure he did not get into the landing space, which could have resulted in three free throws right there. The other thing about that particular play is, for Fresno State, you're coming down with possession. It gets away from you before. Then you end up, like you said, fouling too early, and you almost did everything you could to take the win away this time, and yet you still find a way to win. Do you leave the court if you're Fresno State saying, you know what, this was just preordained that we were going to lose to Utah State in similar fashion, but we were going to win this thing? I'm just curious, because you bring up probably the more cogent point, and that is, who do you not want to see coming out of the gate? I mean, we know Nevada's hanging around there, and you could even argue Utah State could be your semifinal round, but are you worried about a Boise State that you talk about the games being close? You worried about that, or are the Bulldogs just simply better when it comes down to 40 minutes in Las Vegas? Because you and I both know, Jackson, they're going to have to win the tournament in order to go. I don't think there's any doubt about that, right?
Right, and I certainly like them head-to-head against the Boise State, but again, you're talking about winning your third game against a team that can always be difficult, and Boise State has now proven that the margin, I think the Bulldogs are a lot better, but the Broncos have proven that they can get at least very close to winning and potentially get that win if they get a third shot. We'll see if the Bulldogs can sweep New Mexico. That's another team that's going to be in that group of six that are going to be playing in that first round, most likely. Colorado State has beaten the Bulldogs. We haven't seen Air Force, so we'll only get the one chance at the Falcons in the regular season to see how that matchup goes. And I mean, if you can get Wyoming or San Jose State, that would be great, but I don't see either of those two teams coming out. So the Bulldogs, I think if they can kind of polish things out here the rest of the way, they should be able to handle that first-round game and then try their luck with the most likely a Utah State and Nevada the rest of the way.
Yeah, you brought up something else that I'm glad you did. When you're either in the arena or at home watching a game and you've got the clock superimposed on the screen, if you're watching, or you're at the arena where you can stare at the shot clock, provided it's working, okay, it's easy to say the guy shot it too early, right? But the biggest thing that happens to you if you're out in the court like Hobbs was at the end, yeah, you hope to have that clock kind of going off in your head. But, Jackson, the last thing you want is to hold it too long. So even though you might look at the clock and say, you know what, he had time for one more dribble, that's easy to say as opposed to being the guy who has to take the shot, right? You just want to make sure you get it up. And Hobbs got it up in a big hurry. I think he had a little bit more time, not much, but probably not enough that he was confident to try to get a better look. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, especially when you have to go all the way down the court, that's when you really start to lose track of where the time really is and what it is in your head without looking at it, and potentially missing that split second of getting the open look or driving to a spot where you can get the open look. And down by two, you probably want to get it off even earlier if possible so that you have a chance for a tip-in if it bounces off and someone's at the right place at the right time.
Also down two, you could have looked at OT, and it may very well have been, despite the spread floor aspect, that they wanted to win or lose it right there. But whatever the case, the Bulldogs got away with one, and, you know, as we always say, it beats losing, right? I mean, that's all there is to it, which does bring us to the final issue here basketball-wise, and you brought it up at the board, and that is about the success that Justin Hudson has had right out of the gate. Nobody in the country is having a better first-year run than he. Do you see Hutt here 10 years from now, 5 years from now? I mean, is this – I mean, with Rodney, I mean, it was, what, seven seasons, which time goes by quick. But do you see Hutt as the guy who's going to fall into the Boyd Grant sort of mold that we saw here, I mean, with his roots? Or will success breed Power Five, that old football designation for basketball, Power Five schools come knocking at the door here?
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I mean, he does have some of the recipe that goes into a coach that might stay here for a while, with his, of course, Central Valley roots coming from Bakersfield, and he knows the history of the program firsthand with guys like Boyd Grant and all that. And it'll be interesting as well to see what happens going forward, because the main production from this team is, of course, coming from your two senior guards, Deshaun Taylor and Braxton Huggins, who he inherited, and of course, Nate Grimes has really been huge right in the post. But, Coach Hudson is really recruiting a level of player that would probably even surpass some of the guys that are kind of on the back end of the bench right now. But you may see some of his freshmen or other players come in and contribute right away. And his recruiting has been very promising, that this team could continue to traject upwards, even if they lose some big talent in their two guards with Huggins and Taylor. But those are two scorers, I think, that have really helped the Bulldogs in this stage where it's not quite a rebuilding process. You've got two guys that give you a shot pretty much against any Mountain West program that they're scoring. And it's been Coach Hudson's coaching that has pulled everything together and tied the loose ends and made them a viable team in the conference.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. And the reality, I think, of it is overall, Jackson, when you talk about a West Coast major college basketball powers or across the country, you have a team that plays so many late-at-night games out here that you can fly under the radar when you get to the conference tournament. If for some reason this team, Fresno State, catches lightning in a bottle, and they are capable of it, we've talked about the ability to shoot from three. They get hot from three. They can stay in the game with most anybody, including Nevada. If for some reason the Bulldogs cut down the nets on CBS, all of a sudden you're very young in regard to head coaching career, becomes a cause celeb, doesn't it? And people across the country pay attention when you're on CBS in the middle of the afternoon, in prime time in the East, really, early evening. That's when people start to pay attention, right? So I guess when we say never, it is applicable in regard this year to what happens in the conference tourney. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I mean, if you get a team that gets hot and you really pick up that national interest, we saw USC went after the Florida Gulf Coast coach, and they're still going on with the Trojans. So, I mean, things can change really fast in March if you can get to the big dance, but it's a tough ask. And at least this Bulldog team is one that has some of those high-volume scorers that could maybe make a run or win a game or two at least if they were able to get there. But overall, it's going to be a tough task to get past. Just to get to Nevada and then to beat them most likely in the title game is going to be a tough ask.
Yeah, that is right, and I think if you were to ask Hutt that very question I asked you, he would probably just sort of stare at you and say, we're worried about New Mexico, number one, and number two, this is my first year here. And, you know, his dad has coached high school forever in Bakersfield. So I say that, Hutt has the success that it appears he's going to have. You just sign him to the lifetime contract and get it out of the way. Is that how you'd administrate it if they put you in charge, Jackson? Which is a frightening thought, in all honesty. But I'm just wondering, is that how you would handle it?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited to see his recruits in action. And he's got at least the one transfer that's coming in. And this is a team that I'm interested to see. It's going to be a much different team going forward after this year. Just a lot more front court heavy, it looks like. But his recruiting has this program looking like it's going to keep moving ahead, even though they're going to lose those two key guys.
Well, if at worst they end up in the NIT this year and they make a nice run, as we saw TCU make when Fresno State was the first one to play them the NIT, then Fresno State can be front and center again. So the NC2A, obviously the goal, but it would be nice if you don't make that, if you get to an NIT and make the kind of run, I think, to New York that this team would be capable of because you're siphoning off 68 to the other tournament. That'd be great to see. But, again, first things first, and I know the worry of this coaching staff is singularly how they do tomorrow in Albuquerque. Jackson, I appreciate it. I know we are kind of the late period football-wise, but I think that will break wide open again before you know it, and you and I will have that conversation in addition to what goes on with the club. Appreciate it, my friend. Anything barkboard-wise or boards for Hawaii or San Jose State, any special deals you need to throw out there, old proprietor of all boards west of the Mississippi?
Not at the moment. It may see something during spring football. I'm not 100% sure, but we're still covering recruiting, looking ahead towards the 2020 class, which is just loaded in the Central Valley this year. So it's going to be exciting, and we'll see if Fresno State can get on a few of those guys and maybe have another Jalen Cropper moment in the next class.
Look forward to it, and I'll let you go here at 2:30 because you got to get out to Biden-Bennett and start squeegeeing up that infield. That's part of your duties as well. You are a multi-purpose performer. Jackson, appreciate it. Have a great weekend, and tell your girlfriend my sympathies. That's all I could. Not because of you. Don't misunderstand. My sympathies that she got caught up in the Sister Bertrill conversation. The rest of her life with you, I'm sure, is great. Boy, did I cover that one beautifully. See, my wife is in Charleston with my son right now. I'm safe. I'm three time zones removed. Watch out tomorrow when that changes. Appreciate it, my friend. Have a great weekend. I'll see you.
You too, Tony. Thank you.
All right, guys, the very good sport, as if he has a choice, Jackson Moore. We'll take a break, come back with Marcus. A little bit more after this on 50,000 Watt 940 ESPN. Everybody, welcome back. 2:35 here until 3:30. CG will join you for a half hour of emails. So it's the email half hour today because Nick and Nick will start a half hour earlier than their normal 4 o'clock start with the zone from the field house. They'll go 3:30 to 5:30 today, and that'll hand it off to Paul in Fresno State baseball, weather permitting. And as we were mentioning when we came up, and people in town are already aware of this, the cloudburst about an hour ago or so would have led you to believe that you weren't going to see baseball today, but the sun is now out, and if they can get the field dry, I would imagine they will play it. The only proviso is this is supposed to be a four-game set, and they're going to play all the way through the President's Day afternoon opportunity on Monday. I suppose they could double-dip if they needed to, but there are still showers in the forecast throughout the weekend as well, so we'll just wait and see. The only thing, and well, look, the way the weather has gone here, we could have another system blow in out of nowhere. But I think the only thing that would stop it today right now would be just the field itself absorbing too much moisture prior. I don't think we're going to get another big cloud burst between now and nightfall, but one never knows. So for the moment, we're still looking at a 6:05 start and a 5:30 pregame with Paul. So we'll see how that plays out throughout the afternoon. All right, chance, as always, on a Friday, talk to our great friend, Sir Marcus Grant, the Culver City Madman, the king of fantasy at NFL Network and NFL.com, and a guy who is in the middle of not only a lot of rain, but a lot of flooding and mudsliding in Los Angeles. Em, how you doing, my friend?
Yeah, we are, for the moment, we're holding steady. It's kind of light rain, but I know that, you know, certain parts of the area, they are still very much on the lookout for any more precipitation, just, you know, for what you mentioned, slides and just any kind of potential damage coming.
And we had talked about it during the awful fires that when the fires come the way they did, then you have all the ground cover out, then you get the heavy rains, and then you get the flooding and the mudslides, and my great sympathy for everybody. But I will say this, for those that have built their homes, Marcus, the mega millionaires, on precarious perches for scenic beauty alone, the old Sam Kinison line about move where the food is, that kind of stuff, right? Don't build your house where it's liable to slide off of the mountainside. That's all I can tell you. You know, some people don't have a choice. But those that do, you might want to reconsider that. Is that fair comment? I'm just wondering.
I think that's how most of us civilians believe. Yeah, I think, you know, most of us normies who can't afford these sorts of views look at that and wonder, yeah, it seems nice, but, you know, every year you're kind of sitting on pins and needles hoping that the rainfall doesn't take your house down the hill or potentially into the ocean.
Yeah, and that's the point. And look, there are people, particularly in the Southeast, et cetera, who have no choice. They have to rebuild. And people say, well, it's flood. Well, I don't have a choice. I think if you have built your house on a mountainside, you can probably move it land-wise somewhere else, right? Sell that to somebody who wants to graze, and then just, yeah, maybe it's just me, you know. Or you're right, maybe it's just incredible bitterness because I'm angry that I don't live on this side of a hill. At least I'm not planning on it, though, the way things are going, one never knows. Just a van down by the river. That's as close as I've come. All right, and two things I want to talk to you about here as we spread a little bit away, as always, from Fresno State in this particular segment. One is the Kaepernick Eric Reed settlement. Em, you and I have been around the bend about this. No, Colin, I like him. I knew him when he was in Turlock the first time around. We've talked about how he wanted to come here and play football, Fresno State, and baseball, and that didn't work out, and it worked out okay for him at Nevada last I checked. But he had turned this in to very much, and we haven't ever gotten into the right or wrong of his points of view, and not what he wants to get across, but the manner in which he's done it. And I'm not going to go in that direction, but I have to ask you, this settlement where a non-disclosure is at the forefront, to me, understanding you work for the league, and I get it, it's to protect the league, but does it damage Collins' credibility at all if he took the deal, no matter what the financial implication might have been, rather than going public with things? Was this the only option, in your opinion, he had? And for those that said, okay, he is the flag bearer for this within the league, not the political aspect outside the league, within the league, that he has now let the others down, the rank and file down, how do you feel?
I don't know. I know this is probably going to be the eternal argument about what happened. I mean, I tend to lean toward the side of, I think in its own way, it proved his point. The fact that the league came to an agreement. And you know, obviously, right, as you mentioned, I think there were probably things that were going to come to discovery that, you know, certainly the league did not want public. You know, we will probably never know what those things are. But I think if you are Colin Kaepernick, the fact that the NFL was not willing to continue to stand behind that position and continue to fight this thing in court. Because certainly, look, I know that Kaepernick has become sort of a cause celeb amongst a lot of, you know, entertainers and activists and what have you. But still, the league has deep pockets. And if they really felt strongly, they could continue to fight this thing. And I think if you are Colin Kaepernick, and to a lesser extent, if you are Eric Reed, I think the fact that the league was willing to kind of settle and have this non-disclosure agreement, I think that goes a long way toward sort of proving the point that you've been trying to make for the past few years.
And Marcus, I agree with that completely, and that's why I want to make this very clear. The aspects of what Kaepernick has stated he wanted to get across societally, not talking about that. I'm talking about just within the confines of the league, so not the message he was trying to deliver, but rather the vehicle that he was using for it. It does, and I agree with you, show that the league felt that they had little, if any, chance with a jury, right, to get anywhere with this. And it could have been catastrophic in regard to the monetary amount and other things. But if you're Kaepernick after 2 years out of the league, Emmer, where Reed, who is, I'm not going to say Eric is ancillary to this, but he certainly was willingly drawn into it as a teammate of Kaepernick. Reed still has, I think the perception anyway, a lot of tread left on the tires. With Kaepernick, is he in a position, Marcus, where realistically, I know he said that he wanted to play, if he played AAF, he wanted $20 million a year, which is a way of saying I'm not going to play there. Has Kaepernick seen his on-the-field time now just by the sheer erosion of time? Has it been taken away from him, so now his political clout solely exists on his ability to speak out?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think most people had kind of come to the conclusion that Colin Kaepernick was never going to play another NFL game, partially because of, you know, whether you believe the league, was trying to purposely keep him out, or the fact that, as you mentioned, I mean, time comes for everybody, and spending this much time away from the game, you are going to have an erosion of skills. So one way or another, I think most folks had believed that he was done. And I also suspect, and this is just my own speculation here, that at some point, you know, even just this case and pursuing this case maybe just becomes a drag on the other things he is trying to accomplish. He has his foundation. He is continuing to speak out and you know, connect with the community in other ways. And you do wonder how much this is starting to kind of be an anchor on that. And maybe at some point you do look around and say, okay, I have proven the point that I set out to prove. Let's move on and see what the next chapter holds.
You're right about that, and I will say this, as far as legacy, his impact, whether you agree with him politically or an approach, whatever, his impact is undeniable. He has transcended sport in that regard. I don't think that was the intent going in, but that's, I'm not saying he has run from it either, but I'm not saying that he ever said, you know what, I'm going to become this figure that is above the contesting of the game itself. That was a natural offshoot, and I don't think he was fully engaged in that as much as it was trying to make a point that he believed in deeply, whether you agree with him or not. But I will tell you this, Marcus, just from an on-the-field standpoint, and you and I are both longtime 49er fans, the Kaepernick that we saw burst upon the scene in 2012-2013, I find it unfortunate that we never saw completely what he could have been. I know some people said, well, the league was catching up with him. Other people said the rest of the stuff made this a backseat issue. How do you feel about that just from a sports fan's point of view? Did we never see the best of Kaepernick, or was that burst all we were going to see anyway?
I don't know. I mean, I believe, and who knows, maybe this goes back to the Super Bowl, and I know that you're not bothered by the Jim Harbaugh timeout at all, that you've never thought about that.
Yeah, Jim and Roger Craig are on a foursome with me. We're playing Pebble Beach next week. That'd be a hell of a conversation, yeah?
Should be great. But you do wonder, you know, if the Niners do win that Super Bowl, right? I mean, you know, does Jim Harbaugh stay in San Francisco? Does he keep Colin Kaepernick? Do they continue to develop? Because I think the one thing that's interesting is how much Kaepernick was developing under Jim Harbaugh and the things Harbaugh has done with other young quarterbacks throughout his coaching tenure. And so I think it is fair to think that if that duo stays together long term, that maybe Kaepernick develops into something else. And who knows, maybe his ceiling isn't much higher than what we saw. But I do think it's fair to wonder that maybe there was some growth still to be had if the 49ers kept this thing together. That maybe, you know, they put together a string of a couple of Super Bowls in 4 or 5 years. Who knows? But, you know, it all kind of got robbed from us, and you wonder how much of it goes back to them coming up, you know, what, 5 yards short of a Super Bowl championship all those years ago.
Yeah, you're right. And the timeout that preceded that ill-fated final sequence, which the only quarterback that had a worse time down by the goal line was Russell Wilson, right? Because Kaepernick would have had Crabtree three different times and couldn't find him. But that does, in a lot of ways, I think, from an overall standpoint, probably seem inconsequential given what has happened. And so, you know, I will tell you this, though, Marcus. I don't know what the financial settlement was, but if there were conspiratorial things going on in the league and they're not admitting that wrongdoing, was it still for Kaepernick not worth any financial reward he has gotten now? Or would you take a step back and say that whether you agree with it or not, the point that he was trying to make does supersede all of this stuff in the long term? When he's my age, for instance, is he going to look back and say, you know what, wasn't that big a deal that I didn't get a chance to play again, but it was a big deal that my name became synonymous with other things?
I mean, I think that's probably will be the greater opinion that he has. I mean, I would think that, sure, he may have a moment where he probably wonders what could have been football-wise, but I do think that his impact socially and his impact in various communities, I think, will have more of a lasting
memory, I think, in his mind when it's all said and done. And, you know, we'll never know what this settlement is, how much it is. I would suspect, based just on past behavior, that a lot of that money probably will go back into his foundation and back toward, you know, the people who need it, considering he gave $1 million of his own money when he was unemployed. I would suspect that he will probably, you know, donate a good portion of this money to causes that he deems worthy.
Yeah, he is a complicated guy, and we sure didn't see it coming. And not that there's anything wrong with the stance that he took, whether you agree with him or not. I don't know if he was fully aware of the backlash, but he has made his name one that people know well outside of sport, that's for sure. And again, that's not the intent, but that is the offshoot of it. One final thing before I talk to you about free agency in Major League Baseball. Eric Reed, do you think he's going to play again? Because as I mentioned, I think he does still have some tread left on the tires.
Yeah, I think he will play. I mean, he played last year, obviously, yeah. And he certainly caused a fuss with his comments about being, you know, drug tested repeatedly. But I do think that he still offers enough to a team that somebody will give him a shot.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. All right, let's switch over to baseball. What we're seeing with Machado and what we're seeing with Bryce Harper, is this the marketplace and finally coming back down to earth? I asked this of you many, many moons ago, if baseball is going to start to view as their, I hate to say their popularity wanes, but on a national basis it's taking a hit. The individual clubs are doing fine. The Cubs are going to start their own network, kind of like the Yankees have with the YES Network in 2020. So the money is still there, but nationally baseball is not having the impact it used to. We see that in the ratings. Are clubs getting more cautious now of the monster deals that leave you hanging for 4 or 5 years, kind of what we've seen in Anaheim, for instance?
I wonder about that. And I was having this conversation with somebody the other day that, you know, maybe that is part of it. Or I wonder if part of it is just, you know, the influence of some of these super agents in here, too, and whether or not clubs have kind of grown tired of dealing with some of these super agents that have squeezed them on so many things for so many years. But, you know, I think we all sort of knew that this was unsustainable, even when baseball was incredibly popular, that it was really unsustainable, especially with the, you know, the guaranteed contracts. I mean, the fact that every year Twitter has its own little field day with Bobby Bonilla Day when he gets his annual check from the Mets for not having played, it just seemed unsustainable. And so maybe this is some fiscal sense, if you will, coming back into the game. But I still think a lot of people, myself included, look around and are still sort of amazed that you have two of the top talents in the game, and here we are, camps have opened around the country, and these guys still aren't signed. I think that still is a bit of a head-scratcher.
I want to ask you specifically about Harp. I mean, look, neither of them are going to win the Mr. Congeniality contest, okay? But through all his stats, has Harper somehow gotten that tag of he's not a winner? I mean, is there something in there? Because even though he's had the numbers, teams he's played for, we've seen it in D.C., did not get over the hump. What about it?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a good question. You know, because I view him differently than I view Machado. I mean, I think both come with outsized egos, obviously, which you're going to get when you have really talented players. Whereas, you know, I think I view Machado as a guy who relishes the role of being a villain. I mean, we saw that during the Dodgers World Series run last year, that he he really didn't bristle at that. I see Harper as a guy who is certainly, you know, very egotistical, but more about, I think, his own ability, and not necessarily that he's trying to be the bad guy, that he just really believes that he's better than you. So I don't know if the winner or not a winner tag has applied to him, because I feel like those failures for the Nationals weren't solely laid at the feet of Bryce Harper, but perhaps maybe because he's had those great stats during the regular season, because he has commanded or is trying to command such a large salary, but that the Nats never got anything to show for it. You do wonder whether or not teams feel like they can tie this much money up into him and not necessarily get the returns they're hoping for.
Well, I'll tell you what, our old friend Jeff Passan has a really nice piece about Harper and Machado on ESPN.com. There's also the Kaepernick piece there. I'll tell you what, Marcus, guys that used to work in this market have become front and center at ESPN.com, and that's even after Andy Katz was let go by ESPN because Woj is the absolute guru, as you know, of the NBA, and Jeff Passer now becomes the primary baseball senior writer, and you see him on SportsCenter all the time. So we had some guys come through that are very much in that national spotlight.
Well, right, that's after Chris Haynes going from ESPN to Yahoo, too.
Well, yeah, we don't talk about that because the Cats was let go. Haynes just took the money and ran off with it. I'm just kidding, Chris. It's a joke. Okay, I'm going to have you on very soon. I haven't had him on since he left. He probably thinks, you're not with ESPN anymore. It doesn't matter. Bill Simmons has been on, for goodness sake. You know ESPN doesn't even like me to utter the name. All right, 20 seconds to go. Is this the year your Dodgers finally, mercifully, after 31 seasons, get over the hump? Or 32 seasons, if you're counting the way I count.
I want to believe so, but I think until they add some more starting pitching, I think it's going to be up in the air. I think that has been their bugaboo, is those five guys at the front of the rotation, and I think they still need a little bit of help there.
Well, I'll tell you what, you can talk Doug Fister out of retirement maybe, because Doug just decided to retire. I think Doug has enough money. I think he'll be okay. And if you're a Giant fan, all I can tell you is I've got my Wait Till 2014 bumper sticker ready to go. Because they have drifted way too far from shore. The Giants have drifted off, and I'm afraid, my friend, our beloved Warriors, after June, are going to join them in the fall of 2019. We'll see. Emma, appreciate it. Have a great weekend. I know you're playing in the celebrity game. Guard Kevin Hart very tough tonight. That's all I ask. I'll talk to you next week. Take care.
All right, take care, Tom.
All right, a good friend, Marcus Grant, NFL Network, NFL.com. Take a break, wrap up hour one on 50,000 Watt, 940 ESPN. Hi, buddy. Welcome back. Thanks again, of course, to Russ here at hour one and Jackson Moore and Marcus Grant. CG will join me for a half hour coming up right after the top of the hour. Sports Center. We'll go over emails until 3:30, and then Nick and Nick ready to go with the zone from the field house to 5:30. And then, as far as we know, baseball still as scheduled tonight. Paul ready to go at 5:30, 6 o'clock first pitch from Biden Bennett. This is KFIV Fresno. About a half hour for the email hour, hence the email half hour today. TDAD1@att.net. TDAD, the number one at att.net. We're out early today because Nick and Nick with the zone from Fieldhouse, also early because Paul has baseball scheduled 5:30, and we're hoping they're going to be able to play. I know that the weather, at least for the moment, appears to be okay. The issue is going to be how wet the grounds are at Biden Bennett, and we'll see. But unless we hear different, we assume they will go ahead and give it a shot. If there's any update, this show or Nick and Nick, they will let you know, or we'll let you know as well. All right, as we do, when it's time for emails, bring up our great friend Christopher Gabriel with you with CGP 3 to 6 Monday through Thursday, and on Fridays 7 to 9 a.m., and nice enough to slide in, usually for an hour, on Friday afternoon. Today, a half hour. So let's bring Christopher up right now. CG, how you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, my friend. Always fun to join you on Fridays, as I like to put it out, and I've already done that on Twitter. Friday emails with Tony, the good, the questionable, the curious.
Is that the emails or me?
My bell's back in the studio. I need that. But it's going to be a fun hour because I get to talk with you for half an hour, and then I'm going to be going on ESPN Albuquerque with my friend Jim Villanucci, and we'll be doing a little preview of Lobos Bulldogs.
Yeah, Bulldogs tomorrow afternoon, and the game is on our air on ESPN3 as well. We'll talk more about that in just a moment. I want to get to Dwight's email, CG, because it is one of the rare opportunities we have to talk hockey, and it's a topic that has come up in the past and has been dismissed, and I don't know that it's going to come up again, but with the National Hockey League being more reticent about taking a break even for the Olympics, maybe it is time to look at what Dwight brings up. And what Dwight is saying is that each year from the end of the Super Bowl to the start of March Madness. We have roughly a month without much going on of import on a national sporting basis. Now, again, the exception would be once every 4 years the Olympics are there, and race car fans will tell you the Daytona 500 is there. But I get what he's saying about the four major sports. He said, so why doesn't his favorite, and he adds most underappreciated sport, the NHL, rush to fill the void by arranging for the Stanley Cup playoffs to wrap up during this period of time? He said it'd be the perfect time of year for major eyeballs to be on the sport from coast to coast, and a great opportunity to put the NHL where it belongs, right alongside NFL, NBA, and Major League Baseball properties of national prominence. You are a hockey guy, CG. I'm still calling games in the league. I'm wondering, would it be practical to do it so that the playoffs started right as we got past the first of the year, so they would go January and February, early March, and wrap up rather than wrapping up in mid-June? Would it make sense? Could you even do it with the season having to start then in the summertime?
The short answer is no. And let me preface, and I hope Dwight's listening. Man, I am right there with Dwight. Anybody who's known me for any period of time, you are certainly right there. Hockey is my absolute passion when it comes to pro sports. I grew up with Chicago Stadium, the Barton Organ, Tony Esposito, Bobby and Dennis Hall, Chico Mackey, Pat Stapleton, head coach Billy Ray. I mean, the original six. I used to go to games with my mom and dad before my brother was born. I remember climbing the stairs at Chicago Stadium, and we didn't have enough money for anything. We would be in the standing room only. There were two standing room only sections in Chicago Stadium, and we were in the third deck. It was frightening, but we needed to be there for hockey. So I'm right there with Dwight. I love hockey, but I thought about his email to you a lot, and let's just look at this for a second. Number one, he's banking on the idea that hockey would start sooner, you know, in the summer. That's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. The only way conceivably this happens is if hockey ends at the Super Bowl and then begins around March Madness. You're talking about 5.5 to 6 weeks. That works out, depending upon the team, Tony, to about 18 to 20 games. The playoffs last about 2.5 months. They go from the first week. The last game of the regular season this year, the last day of the regular season, is April 6th. And depending upon how the playoffs go, the Stanley Cup goes into mid-June. It almost got to the first weekend of July two seasons ago. But you would be, if you started hockey at the usual time, you're talking about having to have the season 20 games less and the playoffs basically two teams in each conference. The other option, as I said, is, and as you said, is to start the season in the summer, and realistically, it's not even debatable. It's just not going. They're not going to start the National Hockey League in June or July, right after the NBA playoffs. I think the problem with the NHL is, and a lot of people forget this, Tony. You know this. The NHL plays to about 95-96% capacity in their franchises.
Yeah.
Where the franchises are at, they are wildly popular. The problem with the NHL, not in Canada, but in the lower 48, is to connect the dots and get the interest between the cities. And the National Hockey League needs to, and this is the $64,000 question, Tony. The National Hockey League, Gary Bettman and his staff need to figure out how to market the league in a way that the NBA did under David Stern, because this league back in the NBA back in the 70s was dying. It was dead. And then along comes Magic and Bird, but it wasn't just Magic and Bird that saved the NBA. This is your sport. I mean, it was the NBA taking off and really getting cutting edge. That is what the NHL needs to do. Now, how they do that, I don't know, but I think that there are better ways to do it than just having a glitzy couple of skills competitions at the All-Star game. They put so much emphasis on the All-Star game. I think that they're wasting their time with that. I would add one more thing, Tony. When they had the lockout a few years ago, and the regular season was more like 58 or 60 games, that was the best NHL season in 20 years because every game really did matter, and it's, we saw what a professional sports league would look like with a shorter season. I would be for a shorter season, but we both know that's just not going to happen.
Well, look, your points are right on the money, and it's a very interesting and timely conversation right now because, CG, what you're saying about the regional aspects of the National Hockey League, I mean, I think right now of Connor McDavid, who is a terrific talent, is up in Edmonton, but, you know, Wayne Gretzky became a national, an international figure. Connor McDavid is still a regional figure only, but they love him in Edmonton. Just like the Kings still doing good business now in Los Angeles. You talk about the Blackhawks, naturally the Rangers. It is becoming, Christopher, what I think Major League Baseball is afraid of. I was just talking to Marcus about this, and that is you were a national sport. Major League Baseball always has been. Well, the National Hockey League has been a regional sport, particularly in the Northeast. Major League Baseball, CG, I have to ask you, are they in danger when you and I talk about your Cubs getting their own network? There's no doubt in Chicago it's going great guns. There's no doubt in New York. Is baseball tending toward hockey more than hockey is tending toward the NBA? I'm just wondering, are we seeing baseball going in that direction? So maybe the conversation isn't, is the National Hockey League going to be national? Rather, is baseball going regional only?
Well, you know, Tony, that's a great point that you're making. And as you said that, I had not thought of it that way, but it does have that feel, doesn't it? And what it reminds me of, Tony, it parallels a little bit. The first thing that popped into my head when you said that was the Big 12 and when Texas brought out and unfolded their Longhorn network. And
yep.
the other teams in the Big 12 were furious because suddenly it was like Texas saying to them, well, we're going to go it alone because we are the big ticket in Texas. Forget about all the other Texas schools. We are the big ticket. We're making this money. We're going to care about our own fans and our own organization and getting the right players into the University of Texas. And there are still some bad feelings about that. And I think that is, to a certain extent, what's potentially in play with the Cubs and anybody else that does that, where they're saying, we are part of the bigger group, but we also understand that we are a global brand in and of ourselves. And you know what? On a certain level, we don't really need the rest of you.
Yeah, and you know, that is a danger that the league is going to face because we're back to this issue. CG, and I was just bringing up NASCAR, and you know, we've talked about the fact that NASCAR became a national sport because of a controversy, a three-way tie that wasn't really a tie that brought a regional sport to the front pages of the New York Times because of controversy. Sport,
right,
in and of itself, to be of national import, has to mandatorily matter to people. And if the whole doesn't matter, even if you, within the confines of that, do matter, do you run the risk of having your own popularity eroded at some point because you got to have somebody to dance with? You have to. It just can't be the Yankees. It just can't be the Cubs. It just can't be the Dodgers. The Kansas City Royals of the world have to be of interest if you're going to survive. Or do you say no? You just thin the herd and move on.
Yeah, I think this the answer to that really depends on who you're talking to, because you know we saw an element of this, did we not, when we had the three superstations right off, you know, when WGN, WOR, and TBS came into being, and you had the Cubs, and you had weird fan clubs for the Atlanta Braves springing up in Bozeman, Montana,
that's right,
and Bangor, Maine. You know, remember that?
I remember Fifth Place Fever. I don't know if you remember that one. When they first started, then WTCG, which turned into WTBS, Fifth Place Fever, because the Braves were fighting out of last place before they became a very good baseball team. Because they were 120, 140 games strong, that's why.
That's right. I mean, and I remember getting a cable package when I was living in North Hollywood, and the way the cable package worked was you were given a choice. You were given a choice of two of three of the superstations. You couldn't have all three. You had to choose between TBS, WOR, and WGN. And I took WGN and WOR because I couldn't have cared less about the Braves. But I do think that your question is a good one, and it depends on who you're talking to. And you have to wonder, Tony, when you look at situations like the Cubs, there's only, what, five or six other franchises that could do the same thing. The Red Sox and the Yankees, well, the Yankees have the YES Network.
Right.
But the Red Sox have New England Sports Network. The Dodgers, I'm not sure what the Dodgers have, but you're not talking about many teams in Major League Baseball that have the kinds of followings that those do. And at some point, you wonder, is there going to be enough arrogance and enough desire to fill their own pockets that it is going to be this little group over here of the haves and the rest of the have-nots, and then, you know, collective bargaining agreements going forward are going to be predicated by what the have-nots feel like they don't get and what they want going forward from those other teams.
Well, and look, this conversation has been brewing for a while, and I always think, and you and I were talking about this, I think about a month ago, 1997, you end up with a World Series between the then Florida Marlins, now Miami Marlins, Florida Marlins and the Cleveland Indians, the long-suffering Cleveland Indians. And Dick Ebersol, the head of NBC Sports at that time, made the comment before the series started, can we just put this on Bravo? Bravo being an NBC-owned network. And what he was saying was, I don't care, I don't know how compelling this series might be on the field, but I know this, the markets of Miami and Cleveland aren't big enough to justify interrupting programming on the network. CG, the only sport that's been able to get around that because of the import of a singular day is the Super Bowl. The numbers, they were down this year, and people say they're tired of the Patriots. I don't know about that. I know this. They will watch the Super Bowl regardless of who's in because it's the Super Bowl. But when you're asking people to watch 4 of 7 or watching 2 months of playoffs, are we to the point where, as much as we would love to say baseball itself is still a national entity, it only applies when the big boys are lining up to play, meaning the Yankees, the Cubs, etc. Have we reached that point? And are the networks feeling that way? Not the regional guys that get to play the games during the year, but when we get to October, is it all about the big boys, whether we want to admit it or not?
Oh, I think so, Tony. And I mean, I'm somebody who came from and was born and raised in, you know, big markets, from Chicago to Philly to New York, college in L.A. I've always been there, but I've had a chance to see life from a different perspective, and that was the years that I lived in Peoria, the years that I lived in Fargo, and living here. Yeah, this is a big area, but we're close to the Bay Area, but we're not the Bay Area. We're on the West Coast, but we're not on the West Coast as it applies to the folks in New York at the networks. And I do think that, you know, the going joke all the time from talk hosts, you and I have teased about it, from print media and so on, is who do the networks want to see in that final? Because if you're looking at if you're sitting in New York, and whether it's TBS in Atlanta or whether you're looking at ESPN or ABC, Fox, whomever it happens to be, if you are looking at the prospect of a Red Sox-Dodgers World Series, who doesn't want that? And a lot of people will say, around the country will say, I'm sick of those teams. But you know what, Tony? They're tuning in because they either hate one or the other. They hate one or the other more, and they're going to watch. It's Fenway Park. It's Dodger Stadium. It's celebrities. It's two teams with huge histories. And both teams really with histories that spent more time losing to their rival than beating their rival. But you can't, not meaning you, but you can't tell me that networks and people around the country are just as jacked up if they find out that it's going to be a World Series between the Cincinnati Reds and the Kansas City Royals. I'm sorry. It's just, it might be great. But, Tony, remember what the numbers were like in the NBA Finals when it was San Antonio and Detroit. Nobody cared. Nobody cared. And it's not that there weren't great players on those teams. and great coaches because, well, we weren't watching for the coaches, but the teams and the organizations were terrific. But nobody cared about that the way they would care about the Bulls Lakers or a Lakers Celtics, something like that. And I think we are, if we're not at that point now with baseball, Tony, we are fast approaching that point.
Well, and I'll tell you what, CG, you're right, and we're almost out of time, and there are a lot of emails we'll get to next week. But to put this back where we started, the reality for Dwight and anybody else about the National Hockey League and the discussion, which I think is a logical one to leap to baseball, because I do believe baseball is tending more to that direction than they are where the NBA and the National Football League are right now, and that's an unfortunate set of circumstances that I hope can change. If there's a reason the NHL has its finals in June, and that's because it can get on to NBC, the big network, in prime time. If you put it in February, if you started this season, like you said, in July, and you put your playoffs in January, February to early March to get out of the way just in time for the big dance, the reality is, CG, you would not see the light of day on a commercial network. You would be relegated to NBC Sportsnet
right.
the entire time, because they would say at the network, we're not going to take February sweeps and throw the National Hockey League on. So I hate to say, you know, that that every sport needs to know its place, but you do need to know your place if you're going to survive with the main networks, with the big four.
Forgive my interruption. You're absolutely right. And it is incumbent upon the National Hockey League to understand, and they know this, that they have a great sport. Hockey is a great sport, and I just get so tired of the common fan saying, "Oh, went to a fight in a hockey game." You know, just stop with that, because that's not what this NHL is. It was what the NHL was in the 60s and 70s and 80s. It's not what it is now. It is very much what Wayne Gretzky wanted to see for so long. Are there still fights? Yeah, there are. And you know what? If you've ever played hockey, I have. You understand. And Russ has. Russ plays now. You understand that's part of the game. Players aren't looking to do it. The days of the enforcer and the bench-clearing brawls, those are basically over. But the National Hockey League has a great sport, and they have some of the best athletes in the world in that sport. And, Tony, they have to figure out a way to market what they have better, and that means getting out and getting into the weeds and getting into places like Kansas City and Houston and Charlotte and so on, and marketing their product, getting their merchandise in there, and finding a way to get a network contract that gets them more publicity, even in that month of February when the season, you know, you're in the middle to the end of the second third of the season, but get more TV exposure then, for heaven's sakes.
Well, I'll tell you what, as far as a sport, a spectator sport in the arena, nothing better than the National Hockey League, and the Stanley Cup playoffs are still the greatest theater, in my opinion, in all of sport.
Yes.
And the one thing about it, and you brought it up in this last minute, Christopher, I'll end with this. You cannot have a great sport unless it's popular in the markets in which it's being played, meaning you can't say you're going to be nationally prominent when you're not appealing to the markets within the confines of your group of teams. The NHL fulfills that criteria. They sell out everywhere they go. All teams have great attendance. The trick is to draw, like you said. Does it play in Des Moines? That's the bottom line. Michael Jordan and Magic Johnson played in Des Moines just fine. National Hockey League is still regionalized in that regard. I don't know how you get around it. CG, appreciate it, my friend. Wish we had more time, but we have baseball coming up today, so everybody else is up a little bit early. I'll talk to you next Monday. Take care.
Have a good weekend.
You got it. Christopher Gabriel, guys, we are done. Thanks to Russ. Stay tuned. Nick and Nick coming up. Fieldhouse half hour early today. And as far as we know, baseball still online with a pregame at 5:30 from Biden Bennett with Paul. This is KFIG Fresno.